Hello, everyone. I'm Keith Powell, and welcome again to another edition of Media Network Plus, right here on PCJ Radio International. Very nice to have you with us. This week, we bring you part two of our conversation with Mark Fahey as we talk about one of the strangest nations in the world. That's right, you guessed it, the DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, more commonly known as North Korea. Now, our guest last week, who we'll hear from in a moment, is Mark Fahey. Now, for those who don't remember, a number of years ago he was on the program to talk about when he discovered the Firedrake jamming signal on satellite that the Chinese used to block international broadcasts from reaching listeners in China. He's now turned his attention to North Korea, a country that he's visited a number of times and covertly recorded domestic programs off radio, as well as other things. I'll give you the information about the ebook in a moment. But first, Mark Fahey talking about that fascinating book, Behind the Curtain, North Korea. I mean, there really is a lot of content out there about North Korea, documentaries on film. The BBC has done them and time and time again, and books. Let's talk about yours. What sets yours apart from the others?
Well, first off, I've kind of had to explain this a lot recently because it's described as an e-book, and unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which camp you fall into, it's only available on Apple devices in that it works on the iPad, works on iPhone, works on Apple Mac. And so a lot of people say to me, how come it only works on these devices? Can you do a PDF of it and so on? So the first thing is to explain it is, even though it's called an e-book, it actually is kind of a hybrid between an application and a book. So if you think of it in the sense of a book, it's very multimedia rich. There's every single thing you push, shove, photos expand, there's audio and video all the way through it. And so my intention, it was never going to be exactly in the format it is now when I first conceived it. I originally conceived that I would do this and produce a probably like an interactive website, and another idea was putting it on a series of DVD ROMs or a Blu-ray ROM and so on. And then when I was kind of conceiving this project, the iPad was released. So in the very early days of conceiving the project, the iPad was released. And as soon as I had an iPad in my hand, I thought, this is the kind of device which it's really for. So what makes it different is that there's plenty to read. It's been formatted in a kind of like a I've tried to make it an easy read, and it's more of a magazine format than a book. It's not something that you necessarily would read in a serial way, right from the first page to the last page. If you want to do that, it will work that way. But it's also something where you can pick up, read for 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 15 minutes if you want, watch video clips, listen to sounds, and so you can consume the content over a very long time, or you can consume it in a serial way. But it's very multimedia rich, full of applets and so on, and it's all around the theme of around broadcasting, mass media and propaganda in general. And when I got into it originally, it was going to be a work about the electronic mass media, and two kind of things really hit me. One was that I needed to kind of explain the fundamentals of the North Korean myth, so introduce the various actors, the locations that appear frequently in propaganda, which meant a kind of a bit of a North Korea 101, which is the first part of the book. And then the other part was, after traveling there so many times to collect the content, the whole environment, it's just propaganda. Everything that happens in that country is propaganda. What you see on the street, what you see in a park, the propaganda never stops. So then the scope of the project expanded beyond electronic mass media into to magazines, books, the printed news media, but also things like monuments, statues, signs, mm-hmm. like every aspect of life.
Right, yeah, I was just about to say, I mean, in North Korea, the thing that I noticed right away is that everything built, everything, is in dedication to the Kim family. Everything.
Yeah, that's right. And there's no... So unlike in our societies, we have an expectation that there'll be pop songs about boy meets girl, girl meets boy, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's art forms and entertainment, which is for no reason other than the creativity and for the art form itself. That what I found in North Korea, that's not the case. No matter what happens, every activity is somehow working towards the objectives of following Kim Il-sung and his family.
There's an interesting documentary that I caught a few years ago by Vice, where they visited the North Korean film industry, and they visited this one studio that everything in there, the whole studio, was built as a dedication to Kim. Everything. They weren't even producing any films.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's right.
The one thing I think that maybe a lot of people have a hard time understanding is that you said it earlier on. It's no longer a political ideology. It has become a religion.
Yeah, and so people just like many of our people listening to us today, their faith drives many people's lives. So, well, beliefs drive everyone's life, but quite often that people are religious and that their faith drives their life and what they believe is right or wrong. Mm-hmm. In North Korea, that faith is built around Kim Il-sung and Kim Il-sung's son, Kim Jong-il, mm-hmm. and his grandson, Kim Jong-un. And so so just like someone of faith would follow Christianity or Hinduism or whatever your faith is, or Islam, in North Korea, every decision and every both in government, in social acceptance, personal beliefs and just how society functions is all built around Kim Il-sung essentially being a god.
Well, that's why I think, I mean, especially when it comes to dealing with North Korea, cannot be dealt with in the same way as, let's say, the Soviet Union or even China. I mean, even though Mao was a cult figure with a personality cult involved, North Korea is at a different level. You know, and I kind of wonder sometimes, I mean, is North Korea going to, you know... Is North Korea going to, let's say, advance and make changes like China? I doubt it, because that would mean everything that they have been saying for the past 30, 40, 50 years would have to be pushed aside. Will it fall, if North Korea falls apart, let's say like what happened in Eastern Europe with countries like Poland and Romania, I can see it being an absolute disaster.
Seeing like we saw in China with the death of Mao and eventually the discrediting of his wife and the Gang of Four and so on, this actually gave the Communist Party of China a vehicle to move in other directions to where now, you know, if you go to Beijing or Shanghai, if some people probably go there and don't even realize they're in a communist country. It doesn't mm-hmm. look like one to many people. North Korea is so different. They're at the moment, because we have a Kim dynasty and all legitimacy is built around that, it almost many ways the country, so the society and so on is trapped in this one direction. Definitely it's going to change. It's got to change sometime, but when? It's amazing.
Well, something...
But
something that I've noticed, especially, you know, over the last maybe 15 years that I've noticed, and I mean, quite recently we heard that, you know, certain people in the United States are saying that China has a lot of control over North Korea. Well, that's not exactly true. Now, there was a time... when China did, and yes, it's true that North Korea is an ally of China and vice versa, but today China sees more North Korea as a liability than anything else, and China is just trying, you know, keep the status quo because this is, you know, China's more like a pain in the neck for them now.
Yeah, that's so. For example, China, one of the largest legitimate ways to earn foreign exchange for North Koreans is selling coal to China. So mm-hmm. China have just recently announced that they're not taking any more coal for the rest of this calendar year. And this is a penalty for the continued nuclear testing that North Korea is doing mm-hmm. in alignment with international sanctions. So this is a like a real concrete example of where China seems to be losing patience with this country as well.
Well, one Chinese official told me when I was last in Beijing late last year that off the record, they would like to see major change in North Korea. They would like to see the country unified, but publicly they can't say it.
Yeah.
You know. Now, let's get back to the ebook for a moment. What is the easiest way to get the book? You said through iTunes.
Yeah, so if you go into iTunes and type, if you want to, the fastest way is to go into the iTunes bookstore. So if you have iBooks on any of your devices, you can go into that bookstore, but you can do it in regular iTunes as well. And if you type in Behind the Curtain, and that will produce a whole range of books, most of which are about the theater or cinema. So a better
or home
way
decorating.
To do it is,
home indeed. Decorating with Kim.
So you can scroll through all of the results, or if you add it one extra word and put Korea, then you'll see it come up. And it's a sizable download. There's a limit. There's a file size limit in iTunes of 2 gigabytes, so I just almost hit that. So it will take a while to download, but I believe it's worth it. And in fact, there's been a large number of downloads, and everyone seems to think it's worth it. So I think you should give it a go and just accept that it might take 10 minutes or 15 minutes to download.
So let's say you started off with China, North Korea. What's next? I mean, there aren't many communist countries left in the world.
Yeah, so I've been working on this idea about Eritrea for quite a while, and I've done a fair bit of research, but haven't really kicked it off yet. Eritrea being the country which is either equal or sometimes on some indexes one rung lower at the bottom of media freedom in the world. Mm-hmm. But I've ended up being sidetracked on a couple of other things, but about capturing spectrum, radio spectrum, broadcasting spectrum to archive it for future generations, which is keeping me interested at the moment. But the next North Korean, this book is only actually the overture to the project. So the whole project Behind the Curtain runs at least for another few years, but I don't think it's ever going to finish. It's a total of 5 books, and all 5 books are well on their way. Some of them are almost finished. And this one that you can currently get from iTunes is the overture. It's like the abridged Reader's Digest version of the whole project. The next one comes out in about, hopefully in about 6 to 8 weeks' time. And this is slightly different in that collecting and, well, doing all this research and going into the country meant that I took thousands, if not tens of thousands of photographs. And they're really amazing, but a really high percentage of them, maybe 80%, 90% of photographs don't fit into the topic of broadcast media and so on. So there's all of these amazing photographs. So the next part to this project actually is presenting these photographs, which aren't really relevant to the topic we're discussing, but still I think deserve to be out there. So you can you'll be able to find that sitting next to the book we're talking about in a few weeks' time as well.
Do you know if North Korean officials are keeping an eye on you now?
I suspect they are. My website, which is behindthecurtain.asia, has had, just when I look at visitors and so on, I can see that there's been quite a few hits from within North Korea. So that means, of course, because there's no access to the general public in North Korea to the internet, that means that someone, at least if it has to be some particular purpose for someone to look at it. So I'm sure I'm very low on their list of people of interest, but they'll be aware of it. So I'm never planning to return. I actually suspect that in my lifetime I will return, but of course I can't return till there's a significant change in the way the country is run. But a couple of years ago, people quite often asked me, what do I think will happen? And maybe even about 2 years ago, I was saying, I wouldn't be surprised if in my lifetime it still continues. But I think now with what's happening, new United States president, just the advances that North Korea is making in their weapon systems and so on, and the amount of information that is now reaching the elite and educated classes, outside information in North Korea, I just think that something is going to happen sooner rather than later. So within the next few years, I'm expecting something's going to happen.
You know, I was going to say just a moment ago, I mean, you did China, you did North Korea. One country I would suggest, because things are starting to change very fast, and that's Cuba.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, Cuba
I've never been to Cuba, and it's high on my list of where I want to go.
Cuba has a very interesting broadcasting structure. Even though I worked there in the 1990s, I have been back, and I'm still surprised when meeting engineering and technical friends of mine who work for both the domestic and the external service, Radio Havana Cuba, at how much of that old Soviet equipment from the 1970s is still in operation.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a place that I will be visiting in the next few years. In fact, in many ways, I think I've probably left it too long, but so you've got to get there fast. Yeah.
Mark, thank you very much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks,
because you know, who knows, maybe this interview will make the rounds like the first one we did on Fire Drake.
For sure, hopefully.
And that was part two of my conversation with Mark Fahey, the author of Behind the Curtain, North Korea, or actually the full title, Behind the Curtain, The Guide to the Propaganda and Media of North Korea. It's available from iBooks, and the URL to visit for more information, also to download a copy, is Behind the Curtain, all one word, behindthecurtain.asia, A-S-I-A, so behindthecurtain.asia. It is actually a big download because it includes photo, video, and audio. It's a really interactive book and is quite fascinating. So do download it, behindthecurtain.asia. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And now a little bit of information about our Patreon page, where we've been archiving some classic Happy Station shows and other Radio Netherlands content.
Hello.
Hello.
Here's the Happy Station show, calling listeners. Your station of smiles across.
Hello, I'm Keith Perron, host of the Happy Station Show from PCJ Radio International, which next year will celebrate its 90th anniversary. Along with many new listeners that we have attracted over the last 7 years, there are also many of you that tune in who remember the Eddie Starts and Tom Meyer days.
Things are getting to be more improvised any minute. What was the name of this beautiful piece? Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Kiss it up.
Over the past few years, many of you have commented that you enjoy when we go into the archives and broadcast material that hasn't been heard in decades. With a number of people asking if the Happy Station Show and Radio Nederland archives will be made available. And guess what? Yes. That's right. Yes. The answer is yes.
Can you imagine when Happy Station was only 7 years old, you started listening?
I would like to invite you to become a patron at Patreon. At Patreon, you will be able to hear the latest Happy Station show. And for those who are patrons, you will have full access to unedited Happy Station shows and Radio Netherlands content, both in sound and vision, from the past 89 years. All these sound recordings have been remastered from the original tapes and discs. And let's talk about films for a moment. That's right, Happy Station did produce some films. And we went back to this production studio and remastered them. Now just look at how the original 16mm print looked before. But after spending numerous hours going frame by frame, now look at it.
It was really only a hunch. I had an intuition that he had style enough.
Now, I know that many of you right now would like to see and hear these historical programs. Well, guess what? It's time for you to become a patron at Patreon. Those who become patrons at Patreon will be helping to support the digitization of all these tapes and films.
You cross your fingers, you hold your heart. It's curtain time and away we go. Another opening of another show.
And those who are patrons will also get rewards like rare music recordings, rare programs, books, and much more. Also, if we reach our goal of $200 a month, PCJ Radio International will produce special programs that will be broadcast on shortwave for you. So come on now, show your support today, become a patron at Patreon. For more information, visit www.patreon.com/PCJ Radio. Paramaribo, 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 Paramaribo. And once again, the URL for our Patreon page is patreon.com/PCJ Radio. Now, Donald Trump has been in office for just a couple of months now. And it seems that, well, covering him from a media standpoint is rather unusual. People have called him the king of Twitter, twittering all kinds of strange comments out that very often are shown to be false. So how does a journalist cover Donald Trump? Stephanie March is the ABC correspondent in Washington, D.C., and she now files a report entitled Journalists as Opposition to Donald Trump.
The day after Donald Trump's inauguration, I called the White House press office, and this is what I heard.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again. Thank you.
We always expected dealing with a Trump White House would be different, and in the early days of an administration, things are bound to be chaotic. But the challenge this new US president has put on the media is intense. Donald Trump's criticism and taunting of the press is happening on an almost daily basis. Here he is on his first day in office speaking at the CIA.
As you know, I have a running war with the media. They are among the most dishonest human beings on earth.
And here he is more recently on the Christian Broadcasting Network.
Yeah, I think the media is the opposition party in many ways. And I think that, and I'm not talking about all media. I know people like yourself, but I know people in the media that I have tremendous respect for, respect them as much as anybody. Mm-hmm. So I'm not talking about everybody, but a big portion of the media, the dishonesty, the total deceit and deception makes them certainly partially the opposition party, absolutely.
When we finally did get through to the White House and get into a press briefing, Bureau Chief Zoe Daniel asked a seemingly straightforward question to the Press Secretary Sean Spicer, and she got a seemingly straightforward answer.
The Australian government made a recent deal with the Obama administration whereby the US would take refugees from Australia's offshore detention centres. Now, most of these people are from Iran, but also some are from Iraq and Somalia, among right. other places. Can you confirm that this deal is still on? Are those refugees exempt from what you describe as the extreme vetting, or will that deal change or be delayed?
Yeah. So the deal specifically deals with 1,250 people that are mostly in, I think, Papua New Guinea being held. Those people, part of the deal is that they have to be vetted in the same manner that we're doing now. There will be extreme vetting applied to all of them. That is part and parcel of the deal that was made, and it was made by the Obama administration with the full backing of the United States government. The president, in accordance with that deal, to honor what had been agreed upon by the United States government, and ensuring that that vetting will take place in the same manner that we're doing it now, we'll go forward.
A few hours later, a White House official called Zoe and told her that actually the president was still making up his mind on whether or not he'd move forward with the deal. The official stressed that if the deal did go ahead, it would only be because of Australia and America's long-standing relationship. The ABC reported the backtrack. That night on 7:30, Australia's Prime Minister had this exchange with host Stan Grant.
I want to go to that deal for asylum seekers. Is that locked in? Is that guaranteed?
Well, it's certainly agreed to, yes. It's agreed to by the President, as I said just in the piece you had earlier, in our discussion on the weekend, and was confirmed by his spokesman in the White House earlier today.
So are you taken by surprise by this apparent shift that now he's still considering it, and that's coming from another White House spokesperson?
Well, anonymous, and no one's seen them. Look, Stan, we've got to raise the standards of journalism a little bit here. We have a conversation between the Prime Minister and the President, in which the President gives an assurance. We have a confirmation of that assurance given by the Prime Minister's spokesman in the White House briefing room. That's what I'm basing my remarks on, and I think that's more reliable than some of the reports we've seen in the press.
The next day, the ABC asked the White House to clarify its position in writing. They did, and the ABC reported it. Later on Twitter, Donald Trump himself said he would study what he called a dumb deal. Criticism of the media is not a new phenomena, but the Trump presidency is presenting new challenges for all of us. It's not just the usual claims of unfairness. Now facts themselves are in dispute. The US media spent days after the election reporting on its spat with Donald Trump over the reporting of crowd sizes for his inauguration and the president's ongoing criticism of the press. We, the media, don't have to be liked by politicians. We do have to be respected by our audience. And while there's a temptation to wallow in the injurious rhetoric lumped on us and repeatedly cry foul, we can't succumb to that. While attacks on the free press are troubling, we can't be too indulgent in how much time we dedicate to covering them. This presidency is moving at a mile a minute, and with only so many column inches and minutes of airtime, we must choose what we report wisely. This is an exhausting time to be a journalist in the US, but we can't let our standards slip. The pressure to tell it straight and get it right feels greater than ever for this reporter. A lot of media outlets here in the States are having internal discussions about how to cover the Trump presidency. Reuters editor-in-chief Steve Adler published some advice for his staff this week, words I think many people covering these uncertain times can learn from. Never be intimidated, but don't pick unnecessary fights. Cover what matters in people's lives and provide them the facts they need to make better decisions. Get out into the country and learn more about how people live, what they think, what helps them and hurts them, and how the government and its actions appear to them, not to us.
And that's all we have time for in this week's edition of the program. Because of a technical problem, Glenn Hauser will not be presenting this week's propagation forecast, but hopefully we'll have him back next week. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again very soon. 73 and 88. To the ladies.